ว่าคุณยาบีคาทีจายวราดหูมาลูวาคุณยาบีคาทีGupi nyana bala ba Idi badu dhati Bala ba Gupi nyana bala ba Idi badu dhati Yashodanandana Rajajanarandana Yashodanandana Rajajanarandana Yamuna Tera Manachare Yamuna Tira Manachare Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunabirati Joy Radhu Manuva Kunabirati Gopi Jana Bala Ba Yidi Bala Da Ti Gopi Jana Bala Ba Yidi Bala Da Ti Yashodanandana Vrajajanurandana Yashodanandana Vrajajanurandana Yamuna Tera Madhachare Yamuna Tera Manachare Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunabirati Joy Radhu Manuva Kunabirati Madhava Jabirati Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parvati Acharya Ultra Tera Jatashi Shima Divine Grace Abhaya Chadanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Adanta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya should Huilas Thakur Gajai. Friends, say, Oh, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasiddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gajai. Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Sayamakunda Radhakunda Gidi Govardhan Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Maturanam Gijai Jagadathasami Gijai Munamai Gijai Shimandi Lassi Devi Gijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Gaur Privananda Hari Hari Gom. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guruan Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vananta Samaniti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarane. So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, 24th chapter, text 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atasyam Bahu Tete Kale Bhagavan Madhusudana Kardamam Viryam Apano Jagne Agdir Eva Daruni Tashambahu Tite Kalahi Bhagavan Madhusudana Kardamam Viryam Hapano Chaknegdiriva Daruni Tashyambahu Tite Kalahi Bhagavan Madhusudana Kardamam Viryam Hapano Jagnegniriva Daruni Tashyambahu Tite Kalahi Bhagavan Madhusudana Kardamam Viryam Hapano Jagnegniriva Daruni. Okay. Okay. Tasham in Devahuti. Bahutite Kale. After many years. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Madhusudana, the killer of the demon Madhu. Kardamam, of Kardama. Viryam, the semen. Apana, entered. Jukde, he appeared. Agni, fire. Eva, like. Daruni, in wood. So translation, after many, many years, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Madhusudana, the killer of the demon, Madhu, having entered the semen of Kardama, appeared in Devahuti just as fire comes from wood in a sacrifice. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is clearly stated here that the Lord is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although He appeared as the son of Kardama Muni. Fire is already present in wood, but by a certain process, fire is kindled. Similarly, God is all-pervading. He is everywhere, and since He may come out from everything, He appeared in His devotee's semen. Just as an ordinary living entity takes birth, his birth, by taking shelter of the semen of a certain living entity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the shelter of the semen of his devotee and comes out as his son. This manifests his full independence to act in any way, and it does not mean that this or he is an ordinary living entity forced to take birth in a certain type of womb. Lord Nrisingha appeared from the pillar of Hiranyakashipu's palace. Lord Varaha appeared from the nostril of Brahma, and Lord Kapila appeared from the semen of Kardama. But this does not mean that the nostril of Brahma, or the pillar of Hiranyakashipu's palace, or the semen of Kardama Muni is the source of the appearance of the Lord. The Lord is always the Lord. Bhagavan, Madhusudana, He is the killer of all kinds of demons. And He always remains the Lord, even if He appears as the son of a particular devotee. The word Kardamam is significant, for it indicates that the Lord had some devotional affection or relationship in devotional service with Kardama and Devahuti. But we should not mistakenly understand that He was born just like an ordinary living entity from the semen of Kardama Muni in the womb of Devahuti. So again, the verse. Tasham bahu tite kale bhagavan madhusudana kardamam viryam apano yagye Jagne Agnir Iva Dharani. So Omagana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Un Minitam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. First, I want to talk about defining this word, or talking about the use of this word, Madhusudana. And you find this word used quite often, and also without the sudana, Madhu. So it's an interesting story that Prabhupada makes reference to and the Bhagavatam makes reference to, but it is further elaborated in the different Puranas, like the Padma Purana, and also in some versions of the Mahabharata. So Madhu and Kaitava were demons, actually the original demons at the time of the creation of this material universe. So the story goes as follows, that once upon a time, some earwax fell out of Lord Vishnu as he was resting on Anantashesh, and Lakshmi was at his feet. And so this earwax, don't blame me for the story. This is there in the Puranas. So this earwax became two demons, Madhu and Kaitava. You've heard the story before? Some of you, you know, you hear this word Madhusudana all the time, or Madhu. It's really interesting, so to understand where that comes from. So, but it means other things in different contexts too. So what happened is, they, of course, got benedictions, and they became extremely powerful benedictions from Lord Brahma, of course. And what they did is they attacked Lord Brahma, what's called biting the hand that feeds you, so to speak. So they attacked Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma, he couldn't do anything. So whenever there's difficulty, the demigods, Lord Brahma and all the rest of the demigods, who do they call? Vishnu. You find this continually throughout the Bhagavatam, like especially in the eighth canto, especially the fighting between the demons and the devotees or suras, and you know Vishnu has to be called in always at the last minute, and so many stories like this. So anyway, so he calls for Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu. There's a story, one of the stories is that Lord Vishnu is resting, so he doesn't wake up. And so, therefore, there's prayers to, sometimes is mentioned a Yogamaya and other times Lakshmi. You know the story? So they pray, please wake him up. And somehow or other, actually it was Yogamaya in the story. Because he's sleeping in Yogamaya. Yogamaya means, yoga means connection, maya means mercy in this particular context. It doesn't always mean illusion. So he wakes up, Lord Vishnu wakes up. He starts to fight with Madhu and Kaitava, and basically, he can't get anywhere with them. This is a pastime. This is not indicating that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has somehow or other become powerless. It's a pastime, just like the pastime we're reading today. We'll describe more what I mean by that. So anyway, so eventually, he says, I'm so pleased with your prowess, my dear Madhu and Kaitava. Please ask for benediction. So the Lord is offering a benediction. But Madhu and Kaitava are thinking that they're so powerful and they're so proud of their power. This is a danger, even for devotees. It mentions, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that one of the causes of anarthas is what? Devotional service. Not the devotional service per se, but what happens when you get a little advanced in devotional service and you get profit, adoration, distinction. And just like, I mean, this morning, Pran Govinda said some praise of me, but actually I understand he who praises me is my enemy. So you must be my enemy. Better you just criticize me. That will help me advance in devotional service. So they became very proud because, you know, you defeated, they thought they defeated Lord Vishnu. And they said, no, we don't need a benediction, Prabhu, or whatever they called him. You get a benediction from us. And so, you know, he said, okay. Lord Vishnu said, okay. How can I kill you? You know, how, first of all, there's two different stories. And one is, how can I kill you? But basically, it comes out to, they can't be killed in the water because there was just water everywhere. There was no land at that time. Remember, you know, Lord Brahma is on the lotus flower. It comes from the stem of the navel of Lord Vishnu. So just water. So, you know, we can't be killed in the water. And there's no land. And so Lord Vishnu, being extremely intelligent, Bhagawan, he manifests himself as Hayagriva. Hayagriva means horse-headed incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like the word Griva means head. Just like you all have a friend, Dasagriva, right? He's your friend? That's Ravan. That means head, ten-headed one. So Hayagriva expanded himself. Then Madhu and Kaitava also expanded themselves. You know, there was like a competition who can expand themselves the most. And then eventually Lord Vishnu, Hayagriva, expanded himself to such an extent that they couldn't expand themselves anymore. And so he put them on his lap, and that was it for the two demons. And he basically brought back the Vedic literatures, which had been taken by these personalities. Somehow the demons have the potency or power to steal Vedic literatures. So also this word Madhusudana is used in other contexts, the Bhagavad Gita, of course, where Arjuna addressed Krishna as Madhusudana, and Prabhupada comments in the purport that Madhusudana in that particular case is the demon of doubt, isn't it? What? Yeah, one who kills the demon, sorry. One who kills the demon of doubt. You know, so the demon is doubt, which we talked about yesterday in class. You know, for the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next, etc. Atradana purusha dharma shasha parandapa prapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. So it's used in that context. And the word madhu without the word sunana or the abbreviation sudana is used throughout the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan too. Because madhu also means sweet. Like there's a, I mean, even in Hindi, a honeybee is called a madhumakhi, right? It means a sweet bug, a sweet fly or something like that. And the gopis, they would use this word quite often, referring to Krishna. Because where is sweet? Just like in English, people use the word sometimes, I hate to use this word, sweetie, right? They refer to their boyfriend, girlfriend, or whoever they're associating with as sweetie. So it's a very important word, nomenclature, that's used quite often. And so also I my experience here is this very sweet temple, isn't it? And also, Balabhacharya has this song, Maduram, Maduram, right? Madurati Pati, Akilam, Maduram. Krishna is sweet. Everything about Krishna is sweet. His pastimes are sweet. His flute is sweet. His devotees are sweet. So we should always have that attitude towards anything related to Krishna. And then everything becomes a vibhava for us. For those of you who don't know what a vibhava is, a vibhava means things or something that stimulates your love for Krishna. A vibhava can be directly Krishna, of course. That's an alambana, technical Sanskrit word. Or it can be things related with Krishna, like Krishna's devotees. I mean, it's amazing. We should learn the art of everything becoming a vibhava. Everything should remind us of Krishna. And actually, it's true. If you go out and you see something in the, quote, material world, and you see the people who have not yet recognized their devotees, I'm not going to use the word karmi, I hate that word, then you think, here's a spirit soul who has forgotten Krishna. That's called Shastra Shakshush. So for a devotee, Yomam Pashati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamayu Pashati Tashaham Napranashati Sachame Napranashati. We should develop that art of seeing Krishna everywhere and everything. And then, according to Krishna in the Gita, will not be lost. That's 6th chapter, text 30. Will not be lost to him, nor will he be lost to us. So, getting back to the topic of this verse, that Devahuti is going to become pregnant with Lord Kapiladev. So, why does the Lord appear in this particular way? Of course, I understand he appears in this particular way for the exoteric purpose of preaching, right? But there's something going on that is esoteric, too. You may say, what's so esoteric about the pastimes of Devahuti and Kapiladev and Kardama Muni? It, you know, appears pretty obvious what's happening. You know, Krishna's doing his normal thing of Parichanaya, Sadunam, Vinashaya, Chadushkritam. You know, he's coming down, Madhusudana, he's coming down to destroy people's material attachments, which is actually demoniac mentality in one sense. So, establishing religious principles, protecting the devotees. But there's something very rasika going on now. I'm not going to talk about the gopis, don't worry. You know, everybody wants to get into the ras, you know, maturya ras, but there's, Krishna is enjoying ras in different ways. And if we analyze the knowledge of rasa or rasa theology that is mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami, we can analyze the different moods and rasas that Krishna is enjoying. And so here, in this particular pastime, and actually Prabhupada says some words here that are really interesting in the purport that I don't know if anyone caught, but he says the Lord has a devotional affection. So normally we think of Krishna having devotional affection, isn't it? Krishna's devotee having devotional affection. You know, he's a good devotee. But here we find something reversed, that Krishna has devotional affection for his devotee. And so in the analysis given by Rupa Goswami, normally Krishna is called the Vishaya and the devotee is called the Ashraya. Right? Ashraya means the repository of bhakti. But it's also mentioned that sometimes Krishna becomes the repository of bhakti or devotion, and his devotee becomes the Vishaya, right? The devotee becomes the focus of Krishna's devotion. In the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, this is very explicitly mentioned by Vishnu himself when he is preaching to Durvasa Muni, right? Sadavo Riyamaiham, Sadunam Riyaham Twaham, Maranyat Tena Janati, Naham Tebyo, Managapi. Beautiful verse. And devotees should try to learn this verse. That the sadhus, of course, sadhu means someone who is absorbed in sat or eternal or in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Riddhyamayam. The sadhus have Krishna in their hearts. Now, of course, you may say, everyone has Krishna in their hearts. But the sadhus have recognized and have Krishna in their heart of hearts, just like Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochet. Leda Shantakshadeva Ridyeshu Vilokiyanti Yam Shaima Shundam Rachuncha Gunaswarupam Govendam Aripurisham Tamaham Pajami. So basically, the sadhus have Krishna in their heart of hearts. In other words, just like Hanuman, you know Hanuman? Nobody's heard of him. So Hanuman, what did he do? He was accused one time of actually not having any love for Lord Ram, because basically he was eating the pearls that Sita Devi gave him. And they asked him, why are you eating these pearls? He said, I'm looking for Lord Ram. Devotees should be like that too. You know, Parikshit, always looking for Krishna. Again, we get back to the point of vibhava and seeing Krishna everywhere, isn't it? We're always looking for Krishna. How does Krishna or the philosophy apply in this particular circumstance? What did Prabhupada say in this particular circumstance? So anyway, so Hanuman eventually just, what did he do? He said, you want to see how much I love Lord Ram? And he tore open his heart. And there was Sita and Ram there. And so that's really how a devotee should be. And not to say you should do that. You know, if there are any doctors in the audience, please, don't take this literally, you know. My heart, you know, if I did that, I'd die immediately. So, but a devotee's like that. It's just like his heart. If someone's in your heart, wherever you go, you think of them. Everything's related to them. Just like you see a boy and girl who are in love. You know, wherever they go, you know, at least last for 3 days. But anyway, wherever. It's true. We pray for that same sort of attachment. Actually, Prabhupada said that. And the Acharyas say that. We should pray to be like utsahan nishchayat dharyat, so enthusiastic, determined, focused, like a young man or young girl attracted to each other. Like in the Shakespeare story, Romeo and Juliet, they were separated and they committed suicide. Terrible story. So, anyway, so the devotee is always, you know, where is Krishna? Parikshit. Parikshit means the examiner. He saw Krishna once. Always looking for Krishna, right? His whole life. And so, sadhava riddhyam maham, that's what it means for the sadhu to have Krishna in their hearts. We should aspire for that. Prabhupada was like that. Every act, every motion, everything was devotional perfection for Prabhupada. You know, I remember sitting behind Prabhupada when Prabhupada was playing the cartels, Jai Ranamadava, and just watching Prabhupada's hands play the cartels. I became Krishna conscious. No, not that I am. But anyway, for a few moments, just watching, You know, anyone seen Prabhupada play the guitar? Does it? I go, oh my God. I could remember Krishna by seeing that. That means a pure devotee's actions are completely connected with Krishna 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day. So that's what it means, sadavo ridyam mayam. And Kardamba was like that too. I mean, some people may say, well, why did Kardamba want to get married if he was like that? Well, he wanted to get married because that was the order he received from Manu. And it was his devotional service. You know, sometimes people who don't appreciate householders, they may criticize like that. Just like one of my godbrothers one time, he was talking to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was relating the story of Sakshi Gopal, and Prabhupada said, the younger Brahmin, he was a pure devotee, and this godbrother of mine was Panchadravida Swami. He said, if this younger Brahmin was a pure devotee, why did he get married? And Prabhupada said to him, half jokingly, because no one would have you, you're talking like that. So, you know, we should appreciate Kardama Muni, the pure devotee. I mean, who else could be the father of Krishna, of Lord Kapiladeva? And that's what's being described here. The Lord had devotional affection for him. So, sadava riyam mayam, I know I haven't finished that. So he has Krishna's heart. He's carrying out his service. And then Krishna says something, sadava riyam mayam. So he says, therefore, I have the sadhus in my heart. Wow. In other words, Krishna's always thinking of Prabhupada. Right? So therefore, when Prabhupada promises something, like chant 16 rounds, follow four regulated principles, devote yourself to the Sankirtan mission, then Krishna's duty bound to fulfill a promise. You know, just like if Krishna tells us something, hopefully we'll take that as our duty. And so that's also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna asks Arjuna, Gonteya Pradigani, Name Bhakta Pranashati. He tells Arjuna to declare it because people may not trust Krishna. Krishna tends to be quite tricky. He doesn't have to tell the truth all the time, does he? You know, very tricky. Battle Kurukshetra is very tricky. I mean, what to speak of Vrindavan? Tricky, stealing things. I don't think Krishna should be our acharya. Right? Think about it. Don't follow Krishna's example. It's really bad for you. But maybe when Krishna became a householder, but he had 16,108 wives. That was a little bit too... You just say, but if you really want an incarnation as an example, you stick with who? Lord Ram. His Maryada Purushottam. Right? Maryada Purushottam. He's the ideal of etiquette, you know, manners and everything like that. So anyway, Krishna asked Arjuna, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. And Prabhupada comments, in this way people believe it. So we have Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada has declared it boldly that we serve this Krishna consciousness movement, remain in ISKCON, regardless of whatever challenges there are. Life is challenges. You know, I was just talking to my godbrother Amarendra yesterday and talking about all the challenges both of us have gone through. For example, he was the one who purchased this farm. You know that? And he saved ISKCON multiple times with lawsuits. Yet, people very rarely appreciate him. I spent 3 hours with him yesterday. I mean, he's my old friend. I joined, not here, but in Gainesville, Florida. And he and Rita Nanda Maharaj were in charge of the temple. So, but he persevered without, isn't it, without any or very little appreciation from people. In fact, many times he was criticized. Save the movement. Literally, we wouldn't be here today, not just this farm, but most of the ISKCON properties in North America. We wouldn't have those properties. So we have to learn how to appreciate. Another point is appreciate devotees for the austerities that they've gone through. So when a devotee, so he has faith in Prabhupada. That's the point I'm trying to get to. He had faith in Prabhupada, and that faith kept him going in spite of all these trials and tribulations and sacrificing what he wanted to do, which was, he wanted to do was political preaching. You know, running for mayor. He did that one time. He and Balavanta. But so he sacrificed all that for Prabhupada because he understood that if I serve Prabhupada, he had that faith, right? That if you just serve Prabhupada, everything will be accomplished. So Prabhupada has made that promise, and Krishna keeps Prabhupada in his heart. That's amazing. And then the last part of the verse that I was quoting is Krishna says, or Lord Vishnu says, because my devotee doesn't know anyone else but me, that is Krishna, as his, I do not know anyone else other than him as mine. Isn't it? Maranyatena janati naham tebyo managapi. Such a beautiful verse, isn't it? It's actually one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam because it really characterizes the relationship of Krishna with his devotee, with his pure devotee, with all devotees. He's equal, of course, to everyone. Samaham sarvabhuteshu namaitvisho stinabriya. So really, this is what's happening with Kardama in this particular verse. Krishna, out of his devotion, you know, he's assuming the manifestation as the son, so that's the paternal relationship. You understand? He has the paternal relationship with Krishna. And Krishna is also showing compassion, which is an indirect rasa. So we can analyze the final point, because I know I have to end. We analyze these particular pastimes from the esoteric platform to see whatever the Lord does, he does to enjoy rasa. Krishna is known as Rasa Raj. That means the king of enjoying mellows, tastes. That's what Rasa means. And so Krishna's enjoying like anything. If you have to analyze Krishna's psychology, that's right, you can become Krishna's psychologist. Whatever he does, there's only one reason. He enjoys. You know, you say, why did Krishna create the material world in such a weird fashion? Couldn't he do it just like in the Bible? No, Krishna created the material world in an interesting fashion because he wanted to have fun. He created it by lying down, having Lakshmi massage his feet, his dream coming out, Yoga Nidra, of course. He's enjoying whatever Krishna does. It's not, whatever we do, we're not doing everything for enjoyment, right? When we go to sleep, it's not for our enjoyment. Maybe it is. Shouldn't be. It should be to rest up so we can please Krishna the next day. But, you know, we have a lot of duties to perform. Hopefully, they're all for Krishna. So, but whatever Krishna does, his motivation is solely and purely enjoyment and, let's say, enjoying rasa with his devotees. And this is what's happening here in this particular verse and Prabhupada's purport. So, anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Hari Bol.
Thank you very much. Nice. When you come to lunch sometimes, you get a lot of high-order questions, you know.
That's fine. I love questions.
The speaker thinks it's difficult questions, you know, but we call it high order questions. So Lord Kapiladev He spoke about the miseries within the womb.
Yes.
In his teachings. But he himself appeared within the womb.
Yes.
You know? So did he have to experience those kind of?
No, because the Lord does not have a material body, which is mentioned by Prabhupada in the purport. Jopi sama vyatma bhutanami shro pisham. Prakritim Shramadistaya Samavame Apnamaya comes in his spiritual body, in Brahma Samhita. Iswara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. So his spiritual body, he's enjoying, it's hard for me to conceive of it, but he's enjoying within the womb of his devotee. I mean, I am not God, thank God. And so I don't know how he's enjoying. He's enjoying Russ, obviously. You know, and maybe his devotee is feeding him through the umbilical cord. I don't know. Giving him prasad, giving him boga. You know, but whatever he does is for his enjoyment. You know, even when it appears that he is separated from the gopis or he's separated from Sita Devi, he's enjoying that. We look at it from a material perspective, being separated from our beloved, and it's misery. But from his perspective, and with the pure devotee's perspective, separation is ecstasy. So why did he arrange the pastime of Sita Devi and him were separated for so many thousands of years? So he could experience this ecstasy of separation and deep connection and deep longing. What did I say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. I mean, and why does he put himself into, you know, yoga maya, illusion, like the yoga nidra, for enjoyment? Because if he always remembers, I'm God, I can control everything. You know, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to blast you. You know, what's the enjoyment? Isn't it? He's a dramatic actor. Just like when I was young, I studied acting. Now I'm acting as a sannyasi. But anyway, but actually, I'm a demon. But anyway, so when I was young, I studied acting. It's called the Stanislavski method of acting. Anyone's heard of that before? Any of you scholars? Yeah, you've heard of that. Which means you become literally, or at least for all intents and purposes, you become the person you're acting as. And you really do it. You're just like, I am a rakshasa, you know, just like, and I've seen devotees, actually a story about Amarendra one time is interesting. One time he was playing Lord Nrsingadev. It was Nrsinga Chaturdasi. And Hiranyakashipu, you know, was taken by, he was fighting with Hiranyakashipu, put Hiranyakashipu on his lap. But we had to stop him after a while. He was a student radical before he joined the Hare Krishna movement. And so, first of all, he tore off the devotee's clothes. And the devotee just had underwear on. And so, it's a true story. It's a true story about him. I was there, I saw it. What? No, it wasn't in the script. So, but he got so much into the mood of Lord Nrsingadev. He literally manifested Lord Nrsingadev for us. And so Krishna, he gets in the mood. He doesn't change his body, but he's so amazing that his body looks differently according to his mood, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he was in ecstasy, the arms would extend many cubits, right? Or shrink up like a tortoise. Or Lord Jagannath is experiencing, Krishna experiencing separation from the gopis. You know, hearing about his pastimes, this is a whole story I'm not going to tell now. That's why he looks like Lord Jagannath. His eye is open. Subhadra, same thing. Balaram, Subhadra, same thing. Isn't it? So that's a transcendental body. I mean, we can alter our body a little bit with makeup or put a wig on or something like that. But Krishna doesn't have to change his body. His mood reflects, you know, reflects how he looks, but it's the same transcendental body. Okay, so we had a question for you.
Yes, Maharaj. Earlier you said that you could perceive how this community is very Prabhupada conscious. Was that what it was? And very sweet. Can you be more specific?
Just the way people are chanting. I mean, it's not really tangible in the sense that, you know, like that. But you develop, I mean, I'm not saying I have a sixth sense or anything like that, but you develop a feeling while just looking at the devotees. And of course, this is the largest concentration of Prabhupada disciples in the world. And so you can see it in the temple. It somehow or other becomes manifest in every fiber of the temple here. You know, so I wish I could, you know, be really objective. You know, I'm a subjective person, so it's hard for me to be objective and just say, what?
Yesterday you mentioned the way the devotee dances and they participate in this community because they have an emotional feeling for Prabhupada.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. I mean, just the Guru Puja this morning. I mean, I'm not a sahaja, but, you know, I was basically almost in tears in Guru Puja because the devotee was chanting, and I don't know his name, but I could feel that he understood the words that he was chanting. You know, oftentimes devotees chant words, you know, and they're nice singers and everything like that. But you don't feel the bhav there. So I actually felt, you know, and just every word came clear. That doesn't happen very often for me. Maybe for all of you it happens. But every word actually became very clear. You know, Shri Guru, Charana Padma.
Like that was Tusti Mataji's grandson.
Oh. Where? Yeah. Anyway, it was wonderful. So things like that, you know, little things like that, that really stir the heart. And so, just another thing is now that, you know, you're all here as many Prabhupada disciples, it's our duty to sort of instill that in the next generation and the generation afterwards. And yesterday we mentioned that reading Prabhupada's biography and everything like that, and what we usually do on the Kadasi and some other temples is we let Prabhupada give the class. And so, you know, at least sometimes there should be a class in the morning that Prabhupada gives.
We do that every Sunday. My husband facilitates that.
Very good. Very, very good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like completely, continually remind people of Prabhupada. And especially his pastimes as a person. There's the instructions, and then there's the person. So, I mean, they are non-different, of course. But when we hear his pastimes, we're actually connecting with the Vapu, not only the Vani. So we have the advantage because Prabhupada's there in his pastimes and his activities. Mm. I mean, I've read practically every book written about Prabhupada. And whenever there's a new book coming out, I immediately grab it or get download it or something like that and read it. And we should develop that enthusiasm and anxiety to really connect with Prabhupada. And it's our duty to teach the next generation. Otherwise, We split up. We split up. And I'm seeing this in some places in ISKCON, not here, where there's different, like, guru groups. It's actually so detrimental to our society to form different guru groups. You know, so I can't explain how detrimental it is and divisive to our society. And then our, you know, then the society breaks up and we won't fulfill Prabhupada's dream or Prabhupada's mission of taking over the whole world. You know, Prabhupada had a big dream, not being satisfied until everybody at least is exposed to the Krishna consciousness movement. And our fighting, not only fighting in terms of argument, but just like the party spirit is actually the enemy of Prabhupada's movement. Yeah, so, other questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, you said that Krishna does everything for his enjoyment.
Yes.
Now, Krishna creates the material world, and we are here suffering in this material world.
That's
it's dukhalayam, as he says.
That's right.
So then what is the enjoyment that Krishna is getting from our suffering?
Yeah, that's a good question. The enjoyment, remember, one of the indirect rasas is compassion. So Krishna wants, he's compassionate with us, and he wants to bring us back to him. If he didn't, let's say if there wasn't the material world, what would he do with us, is my question. Because we don't want to be with Krishna. You know, often devotees tell me, I just want to go back to Godhead. And I said, okay, so if you go there, you're going to be bored to death. Because people have this picture of the spiritual world. It's just like a place where you eat mangoes all the time. And you go to the desire tree and just ask for it for pizza or whatever. I mean, and you go to the Kamadhenus and want chocolate milk. I mean, it's just, what the people think, most devotees think the spiritual world is like the glorified heavenly planets. But what they don't understand about the spiritual world, or what they don't think about, is that everything is based on Krishna's pleasure. There's no me. What's in it for me, you know? You know, with him, what's in it for me? It's just like, what does Krishna want? What is, and you're running here and there. What does Krishna, what does Radharani want? And that's a hard one to swallow for us, isn't it? I mean, sure, I love the desire trees. I mean, that I'll take any day and accommodators any day of the week. But the Krishna, whatever you want, you know, what about my cell phone, you know, do I get to... You know, so if we really examine ourselves, we have a lot more personal, you know, self-centered attachment than we think. So what would Krishna do with us? Because, all right, let's say Krishna puts me back to Godhead right now. I'm not really that happy here, you know. So then if it wasn't a material world, what would Krishna do with us? Okay, so let's say he sends us to the material world, everything's hunky-dory or peachy cream or whatever in the material world. But we're not happy either because we're separated from Krishna. You know, you can placate someone, you can give them anesthesia, but they're not happy. It's not a positive happiness. Lord Chaitanya said the happiness in this world is simply a negation of the suffering. You know, if you're hungry, I'm hungry. So I'm not, don't worry. It's a codicil. So let's say, theoretically, it's like suffering. I mean, lust is suffering, isn't it? Hunger is suffering. And when you take the food, but Prabhupada said after you take it, it's not pleasurable to eat. It's actually painful, just like when I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement. We just kept stuffing ourselves and stuffing ourselves and stuffing ourselves. And we had to lie on our side for 3 or 4 hours after eating. Because we were following Prabhupada's instruction, you should eat until the prasadam goes up to your neck. That was in Gainesville. So there's no positive happiness. Krishna wants us to be happy. That's compassion. So therefore, Krishna gives us some interesting experiences in the material world. And actually, the suffering is caused by attachment. We're not actually suffering, it's because we're attached. Just like if someone smashes your car, you suffer. But if someone smashes your car, I don't suffer. Because I'm not attached to your car. To me, it's just a very interesting thing. You know, oh, look at that. The engine's in the driver's seat. So, you know, it's just interesting. You read about it or whatever, but it's not my car. So, you know, so that's the point. And actually, even Buddhism, they understand that, isn't it? The Four Noble Truths, material world is suffering. The suffering is due to attachment. Give up the attachment, suffering goes away. So we're identifying with these upadis, these designations. That's what's causing the suffering. I know it feels real. Certainly it feels real. I'm not asking for it anymore. When I had kidney stones, that was suffering. And I was praying to Krishna better than I ever prayed in my whole life. Oh my God, Krishna, I'll become your devotee. I'll surrender to you. And after they were taking care of Krishna, well, I didn't really mean it. So the suffering has a purpose. It's in judicial theory, it's called restorative justice. It's not retributive justice. I don't know if you know the two words. So retributive means that it's not that God is taking pleasure, or even Yamaraj is taking pleasure in your suffering. He's not sitting there going, ah, suffer guy, you did this. He's thinking, whatever least suffering is required to rectify this person's consciousness, to make them understand. Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punavartya. You know, there's from the highest planet to the lowest planet, there's no happiness in this world. So these are lessons. Just like you go to school, there's suffering, you gotta take a test. I'm still having flashbacks to my university years of having to take the final exam and being in complete anxiety. Anyone's gone to the university, you probably experienced this. And that was like 500 years ago. So, you know, so there's suffering and learning. It's, you know, what do they say? No pain, no gain. There's suffering in doing the Ekadasi Vrat, right? That's tapas. Tapas means, that doesn't directly mean suffering. I mean, suffering, it means, or austerity, it means a fire burning, right? Isn't that the direct meaning? It burns away. So by following Ekadasi, we burn away our ego and arthas. Okay, it's probably time to go because I'll get in trouble. One more question? Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Maharaj, it's not a question, but when you were mentioning the pastime of Amarinja Prabhu, I got reminded of a pastime at one Jagannath devotee. He was an actor by profession.
Yeah.
And so once he was acting as Lord Nrisimhadev in that play, and the part of ripping Hiranyakashipu apart, he actually killed a person. He actually ripped him apart. Real story. And then his final act that he did, he acted as Dasrat. And you know what happened then?
He
when
died.
When Ram left, he actually passed away.
Ooh.
Yes, this is real story.
I will never play Pallad Maharaj any play. Yeah, all right, one more question.
So, Hare Krishna Maharaj ji, so when my initiating spiritual master gave me Harinam, he took a vow from me that you will never leave ISKCON.
Yes.
And he, like, four regulative principles, so no meat eating, including fish and eggs, but some gurus are also emphasizing on onion, garlic, also tea and coffee. So we understand that tea could be caffeinated, decaffeinated. So how to understand all those? And what was Prabhupada's?
Well, you mentioned a lot of things. First of all, never leave ISKCON. That's probably Bhakti Chumar's, right? Who's your guru?
He's only Bhakti Ashraya Vaishnava.
Oh, yeah, that's very nice. Yes, I also say the same thing, never leave ISKCON. So Prabhupada also talked about, you know, coffee, tea, cigarettes, and everything like that. Now, Prabhupada didn't mean herbal tea. Prabhupada meant tea that had caffeine in it. And Prabhupada himself developed a tea. He called it a Brahmastra. Any Prabhupada disciples remember the Brahmastra? Devotee was getting sick. And he was drinking like some light herbal tea, and Prabhupada said, no, let me make some tea for you. Brahmastra is like, hot chili peppers, lemon juice, ginger, and honey. And if you took it, you were well. And either well or dead in 10 seconds. He said, fire, you'd become like a fire-eating dragon. So, yeah, Prabhupada did not like tea, coffee, or anything like that. Another reason Prabhupada really did not like tea is because it was connected with the British. The British exploited India, and the British were the original drug dealers. What they did is they gave away tea for free, like drug dealers do. People from India know this. And got everyone addicted to tea, and then they started charging. And then taxing it. Terrible, isn't it? So Prabhupada had the specific animosity towards tea. Like you hear the story about his wife drinking tea, and Prabhupada said, "Tea or me?" And she said, "Tea." Don't try that with your husband. Because, Prabhupada specifically had the attitude towards tea for that reason, because it represented exploitation of the British. And it's a drug. And the tea they take in India, those of you from India know this, is not like the lighter tea you have in the United States. It's heavy black tea. And the only time I told someone to take tea was when a driver was driving me in the middle of the night on the Yamuna Expressway, and he was swerving, and I said, "You're getting tired." And he said, "No, I'm not." And I said, "We're stopping and getting you tea, whether you like it or not." And I made him drink tea. Your life or tea, So in certain circumstances, you have to do that. Not us, but if you're dealing with a driver, professional driver. Okay, I think we have to end or else we'll get in trouble. Thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada.